So like to worship God, to worship God,
to worship God.
So.
Oh, sorry.
Oh man.
God.
Worshiping God.
All right, what was I even saying? Shoot.
Welcome to TikTok Theology, a podcast that tackles the major trending topics on social media that concern the Christian faith. I'm Megan.
And I'm Steven. We know you can't form a theology in 3 minutes or less, but those videos can identify current issues. TikTok will give us the prompt, and then we'll do a deep dive. Thanks for joining us in this exploration.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to TikTok Theology. We are hanging out a few weeks before the election.
Mm-hmm.
So as we prep, get ready, say our prayers, we felt like it was pertinent to talk about one of those conversations that always inevitably comes up in politics, in day-to-day life, especially if you're in a Christian circle. We're talking about abortion today.
Mm-hmm.
Just a good light little topic, as we like to cover here. Only light topics on TikTok Theology. But obviously, abortion is a conversation that has been had for a long, long time. It's not new. But anytime we get closer to election season, any political season of life, it obviously becomes a forefront conversation.
Yep.
With Gen Z, especially now that more Gen Z are going to be able to vote this year.
Yep.
This is something that comes out on social media a lot.
It's a huge topic this time,
huge
too.
Huge topic. Especially this is our first presidential election post Roe v. Wade being overturned.
Yep.
So there's a lot of conversation happening about it, and we definitely want to engage in that conversation as well.
Yeah.
Not let this topic pass us by.
Yeah. So we titled this one, Evangelicals on Abortion. Like, we did that on purpose. It's not it's not that only evangelicals have that conversation.
Right.
But there is the notion that in politics, we have what's called the quote unquote evangelical vote, which is super problematic in its own right, just to even think about, like, there's a monolithic vote that comes from evangelical people.
Indeed.
But this is something that they use in their metrics, how to gauge what's going on. And one of the biggest issues for the quote unquote evangelical vote is the topic of abortion. And some people have become single or two issue voters because of it.
And yeah.
Does your candidate stand against or for abortion? And that determines how they're going to vote.
Right.
That also has its own problems because they could be signing on to a lot of things that are very, very
bad and terrible.
Yeah, anti-Jesus in different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's the thing about politics is there's no candidate that's going to perfectly represent every aspect of being for Jesus or being for Christianity or every aspect that we would theologically uphold to, because that's not how politics works.
Yeah. And we shouldn't totally expect them to, as we've been talking about this season, last season, the whole time.
All the seasons.
This is all Babylon, right? So yep. Governing in Babylon. But I think what we need to talk about here is, first, what did Roe versus Wade, overturning it, actually do?
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to talk about what are the philosophical differences between people who are pro-life and pro-choice.
Right.
And then how should we as a church respond? We've done a similar structure before, and I think it will give us a more nuanced understanding of the whole issue at hand.
Yeah.
So first.
So multifaceted.
So Roe versus Wade was a landmark decision in 1973 by the Supreme Court that made it a federal right for women to have abortions. And so essentially what that means is that a state can't outlaw or ban abortions.
Right.
And before that, it was up to the states to decide what laws were going to determine if there's going to be an abortion or not.
Yeah.
And so this made it so that way it's just federally legal.
And granted, up until that point, even states had been very, very specific about, technically abortions were allowed, but only at, you know, 4 weeks or something that would have essentially outlawed abortion. So it's not like there had been no abortion laws made in the states just because Roe v. Wade was a thing.
No, every state essentially already had abortion laws and they had their own ways of functioning.
Right.
It's always been an issue, an ethical issue.
Yeah.
But in 2022, and no one ever thought that this would ever happen. I was thinking this is never going to be overturned. And the reason why I thought it was never going to be overturned is because the way the federal court system would work is it goes by precedent. So if it is deciding something new, they're going to put into a big account what has been decided before on an issue like it.
Yeah.
And there's been tons of times when there was opportunities for Roe versus Wade to be overturned
and it
didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Roe v. Wade was the precedent.
Because it was the precedent. It became the precedent. And then a bunch of even Supreme Courts that had a lot of conservative judges on it.
Like, still upheld.
They still upheld it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like, that's not going to be overturned. But that was the goal of a bunch of Christians and evangelicals in this scenario, is if we can get enough conservative judges and we know their stance on Roe, then if thing comes up there, they can overturn it. They have the power to do it.
Yep.
So we just have to make sure that that happens. And so that was a major point for conservatives electing a Republican president that was against get your judges in there.
And then eventually enough, we'll have a majority and they'll overturn.
Yes.
Yes.
And so during the Trump presidency, he had the opportunity to nominate and put in three different judges appointing to the Supreme Court, specifically Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, which, just sidebar, she comes from a charismatic background, and so that's pretty interesting. And they were all, like, he knew their position on abortion beforehand, and so putting it in there seemed like a major win. And just so happened, what was inexplicable did happen. A case came up that could overturn Roe v. Wade, and it was overturned finally 2022, and it was a crazy landmark decision, and a lot of people have been reeling ever since, like, yeah, they not knowing how to take it in different ways after 40 years, you know.
Yep.
And so essentially what happened is now it's back to the states to decide what their abortion laws will be. They don't have to make a federal mandate that they have to allow abortions.
Correct.
So some states are still totally lax on their decisions, mm-hmm, like our state in California. And then other states are very, very restrictive.
We've got straight up bans.
14 states now have a total abortion ban, and then other states have more restrictive stuff. Essentially, what happened was, and this is kind of crazy, the number of abortions actually went up.
Yeah.
So from the 80s, there was roughly 1.6 million or so abortions happening, 80s and 90s. And then ever since then, it was steadily declining. There's a bunch of sociological reasons why, mm-hmm, it was steadily declining, but it, yeah, was. Then after the overturn of Roe v. Wade, it popped up. And it was already starting to rise slightly. And then it rose even more.
Yeah.
And just what happened was the states that had lax laws, women went to them and to get abortions.
Yeah. There's been a lot of traveling for abortions. And even in the U.S. News and World Report, they released in January, like, numbers that infant deaths are higher in states where there are total abortion bans. So there's actually been higher numbers since Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Mm. Yeah. So it's pretty wild and definitely a gray issue.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, before we get into the philosophical arguments, I don't like using the super highly politicized terms pro-life, pro-choice.
Yeah.
But if I were to, it would be pro-life. But
right,
it would need to be
very nuanced.
Yeah, nuanced in, mm-hmm, a way that you're understanding, like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
You know? And we're going to talk about that a little bit,
yeah,
more. But
just to say right off the bat.
Just to say right off the bat, this isn't a pro-abortion discussion. It's,
no,
just, we want to have a fair dialogue about how difficult this issue
it
actually is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So first, let's talk about some of the arguments. So these are philosophical arguments, mm-hmm, and some of them, they can be super reductionistic and ridiculous, but they're the kind of
things have been argued at some point or another.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the main obvious one against abortion is killing people is wrong.
Right.
There's an obvious assumption there. This is how it goes. Killing innocent human beings is wrong. The life of a human begins at conception.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a key that not everyone agrees with.
That is true.
And that is...
Even some Christians don't necessarily
even
agree
some Christians
that.
Don't agree with that. And so that, and that's really, really significant point, mm-hmm, to, mm-hmm, how this argument falls.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, then the fetus is an innocent human life. Killing the fetus is wrong, therefore. And they'll say, why is a fetus a person and not like a group of cells or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, it has a unique genetic code already. And so it's an individual.
Yes.
Now, obviously, when we have a situation where a conception just happens,
mm-hmm,
logically, people wouldn't be like, that's a human being.
Correct.
But we know that it potentially is, or like it will become one. Like,
right.
Like it's not like it's going to become something different.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, fetuses aren't even viable until a certain amount of time. So it's like it actually could not live on its own.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
But like if you see a seed, a mustard seed, just, mm-hmm, kind of leaves a biblical reference. If you look at it and you said, that's a tree.
It is not a tree.
It's not a tree.
It has the potential to be a tree.
It has the potential to be a tree. And also, like, not the potential to be anything else. Like,
right,
it's gonna, like, if you plant it and
it could, yes,
it will be a tree.
It's not gonna become grass or a shrub.
Right.
It'll be a tree.
but that's, yeah, kind of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, but it's not a tree. And unless you plant it and grow it and all that kind of stuff,
it
won't become a tree.
It's a seed.
But then the other argument will say, but it will, that's the only thing it can become.
Mm-hmm.
And the natural way of it, it's already been fertilized, it's already been put in.
Yeah.
It's like putting that seed in the ground,
yeah,
and then already planting it. Mm-hmm. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Is already a tree if it's in process.
Right. Especially with Christians who can point to verses in like Psalms and stuff where it's like, you know, like you knit me together in my mother's womb.
Right.
Like there's a very like,
mm-hmm,
very, very strong sense of like,
yes,
the personhood of a fetus in that sense, because of especially language and verbiage used across scripture.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the real issue. This is like there's other things that we're going to talk about, but the real underlying issue is, when does human life start? Because that's literally it. Yeah. Because if you're just removing something from your own body, mm-hmm. then that is not an abortion.
Right.
But if you're removing another person,
yeah.
then that is.
Right.
And so some folks will say, this isn't a person. It's like a seed. It's a possibility of a person. It's a person in a certain situation. It will become a person, but it isn't one.
Yeah.
So terminating that is not terminating life. It's terminating a possibility.
Yeah, the potential for life.
Yeah, so which is different.
Yeah.
So fundamentally, if you do not believe that a fetus at a certain age is not a person, then an abortion is not ethically wrong.
Right.
Because you're not changing anything. That's like cutting your hair or like, and I know that sounds like, obviously it's not the same. People would be, that's egregious to say that.
Yeah.
But if it's a part of your body that you're...
Or like appendicitis. You go in and you cut the appendix out. And you're
right.
Like, well.
Anything like that.
Yeah.
And then some people will be like, no, well, it has a DNA of a person. But like, and this is where the arguments can get ridiculous. But like, let's say I lose my finger. My finger's on the ground. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That has my DNA.
Yeah.
But that's not a person.
Yeah. It's not going to regrow a you.
It's not going to regrow me.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll say, but that DNA does grow into a you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So
I think this is one of those conversations that everyone has a different, starting point. We'd never agree on terms. No one agrees on when things are happening.
That's the biggest problem though.
So we're all talking past each other about a different argument if you have a pro-life view of life beginning at conception, you're arguing with someone who doesn't believe that life begins at conception, then they're actually fundamentally just different arguments.
They're fundamentally different arguments. And so like, that's kind of the beginning of it. I'm not saying that you should change your view, because I believe that human life happens at conception, but I can understand why a person doesn't, if they have like that view of like, there's a potentiality there and stuff.
Yeah.
And then at least I will become more gracious towards that other view. I won't necessarily call that person a murderer.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right?
I would agree.
So anyways, some other arguments, you know, killing potential people is wrong because it would be wrong to ruin a person's potential. You know, killing beings with a future like ours is wrong. This person can have a future like ours. Causing pain is wrong. In general, causing pain.
Yeah.
And a fetus is sufficiently developed to feel pain by 18 weeks. So anybody that has an abortion, they will feel pain.
Yes.
And then, so those are kind of like regular ones that you'll hear.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting one is increasing the tolerance of killing is wrong on a societal level.
Like desensitizing to the loss of human life, I guess they would
say. Right. And so like allowing abortion is legalizing killing. Even if we're not talking about murder, it is killing of some sort of life. And so it reduces a person's respect for life, reduces society's respect for life. This is generally a bad thing. And I think that's actually, that has some power in ethics of life.
Yeah, that has some merit, absolutely.
Yeah, so that argument. So those are kind of like the two arguments that are strong on that side, I think.
Yeah.
So the arguments for abortion, and these are not just, they're not typically for abortions in general. They're for abortions in selected cases.
Yeah, I have a hard time when people say like pro-choice is being pro-abortion, because I don't think anyone gets pregnant to get an abortion.
Right.
Like that's never like a woman is like, ooh, I'm going to get pregnant just so I can kill it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's, that's not actually the conversation. And that I feel like is almost been what happened, is these like demonizing women as if they plot and scheme to get pregnant just so that they can terminate their pregnancy.
You know, sometimes you may see like in a protest, somebody having a sign that's flippant like that.
Yeah.
And that's terrible. And those should not happen.
Agreed.
Because the actual choice that a woman makes is a very difficult choice.
Yes.
That's very personal for women.
100%.
It's not this flippant little desire thing typically, right?
Yeah, typically, right.
So one is, and we kind of talked about this, the fetus is not necessarily a person with the right to live. So a collection of human cells does not have the right to live just because it is of the human species.
Right.
Like that's just the argument for amputating a limb. Collection of human cells only has a right to live by virtue of a few different facts. One, it reached a particular state of development that makes it a moral person.
Yeah.
And then, or it possesses certain properties that make it a moral person.
Right.
The problem with calling it a moral person is like, even a baby that's been born is not moral.
Moral.
You know what I mean?
If you think of any theology of we're all fallen people, then actually, technically. Yeah.
That baby ain't no altruist.
Moral. No.
That baby ain't no altruist.
No.
Selfish.
We're all, as we all are.
The little baby is an egoist.
Oh.
That's what it is.
That's what,
you know
what
I'm saying? All cares about is
call
eating.
Call your local baby an egoist.
But yeah, so even if you take out the idea of a moral person, they might say like a rational person or a thinking person or something like that, cognitive person, something like that. Another argument, it is not always wrong to end a life of an innocent person. Now that sounds interesting, but there are some very specific cases where that's the case. So there's cases where you have to choose between two innocent people. For example, a conjoined twins, like where they'll both die.
Right.
But you have to choose which person to live.
Yep.
That's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Mountaineering. This is
so specific.
Yeah. It's, when a person can only save their own life by cutting the rope of someone who's fallen.
Yes.
I always think of, did you watch Ace Ventura 2?
No.
One of the greatest movies.
Yeah.
Ever.
You're a fan of that. Yeah.
It's so funny. But in the beginning, he's like mountaineering and he has like a little raccoon and he has to cut the rope of the raccoon. Yes. Raccoon's dying. It's all dramatic.
Yeah.
It's so good. Anyways, this one is crucial and talked about a lot, but the case of a woman who might die if there isn't an abortion.
Correct.
And so I think a lot of pro-life people will rebuttal that and be like, that isn't the same thing. I mean, it is technically, right? They would have an abortion. So technically it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But the difference there is you're not choosing to terminate the life as just a general choice.
Mm.
You're having to make the decision between two lives, which is a terrible decision anybody would be put into.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that's just but it's a different scenario.
Yeah.
And then the big one too that you'll hear a lot of times is the pregnant woman has moral rights.
Yeah.
Has her own rights, reproductive rights. Under some circumstances, these rights might override the fetus's right to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so what might they be? The right of ownership of her own body, the right to decide her own future, the right to take decisions without moral or legal intervention by others.
Mm-hmm.
And the pregnant woman has the right to life. So not aborting the fetus would put the mother's life in danger. So that one's a little bit different here. Mm-hmm. But like the other things here that we talked about, right to her own body. The question is here, does that right negate the right of the unborn child?
Right.
Well, if you think of the fetus as an unborn child, like a human being, then pro-life advocates would say, no, it doesn't, because that's a human person.
Right.
So the right to have ownership of your own body is true, except for the fact that you're dealing with another person's body, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you do not view that as another person,
then that's not the same.
Then it's not the same. Then it's just you having the right to do things with your own body.
Right.
So you see, there's a fundamental difference philosophically.
Right.
And it tends to hinge on
where everyone's coming from.
When everybody's coming from, your view of when life starts as a human, when does human life start?
Uh-huh.
Those are the arguments. What do you think? How do you think about those? Do you know of any other arguments? Is that generally what we hear? What do you think?
I mean, those are probably the big ones, especially then you get really nuanced and you're like, well, if a girl is raped or something and then they get pregnant and they're like underage or something and it's like, well, that kind of blanket banning or this kind of whatever, like actually really puts somebody else in danger. So I think that there's really nuance, there's just always going to be situations on both sides of the coin. I also do think that like these conversations are very gloss over other things like IVF, where you're like, well, if you're doing if life starts at conception and all them little homies in the petri dish, when Christians are doing IVF are technically people. So then are you very comfortable? So it's like there's elements of all of it that if you keep going down the line, it's just not as easy as saying one or the other.
There is a Catholic ethics that will not allow for any contraceptions at all because of that very reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll trace it all the way back to that.
So it's like, I think it's just one of those situations that if you follow them all the way out either way, it's just never as simple as being like, I'm always this or I'm always that.
Right.
You know? And so I think that that's what, if anything, from all of these different pro and against, arguments, you kind of have to see that it's never as easy as always and never.
Right.
It's never like, I'm always going to be anti-abortion. And it's like, it's until it's your person, you know, like until it's your daughter or it's somebody who is in danger for their life or something like that. It's just very easy when it's not to have these opinions and these thoughts when you're outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that all of these conversations, we have to be really inviting Jesus into them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to really, really invite Jesus into these spaces where it's like, okay, I know a lot of Christians who are like, well, it's not worth aborting if the woman's life is at danger because what if God heals them?
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of conversations. And so it's just never as easy as I'm always against abortion or I'm never
Which should put us to pause on being too judgmental on this thing.
Immediately.
These things. That's the number one. Even if you hold positions like you and I do.
Yes.
We just can't be judgmental towards people because it is much more complicated than that. So one thing that I think a lot of pro-life folks will typically agree to is the exceptions of an abortion being rape, incest, or the death of the mother, like potential death of the mother.
Right.
At least that last one, virtually everyone agrees with. Like when you make that decision, you have to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
And they usually choose, sometimes you hear different arguments, but like typically the life of the mother is prioritized over the life of the unborn child.
Yeah.
Reason being, I can speak if that was the situation with my wife. Connie has already affected many lives.
Yeah.
Whereas the unborn child hasn't. And that's a tragedy either way.
Yeah.
But I would choose my wife.
Right. I know a lot of husbands who, when they're put in situations, even when their wife is giving birth, have had to be in situations where it's like, this is not going well. Who are we saving?
And that's usually what people will say. And it's hard to judge either way.
Yeah.
Now, the rape and incest one, I've heard lots of people push back on that. And so, for example, with a rape, they say that's not the woman's choice ever to have the child. Mm-hmm. And it's completely, utterly unfair to her.
Yeah.
And the pushback will be, it totally is unfair. But it's also unfair for the child to lose their life. Because who was actually unfair was a rapist. It was a person who caused that.
Yeah.
And that person should be penalized, but not the child.
I mean, they very rarely are.
And so that's so you hear pushback on that too. So like, and then you can get into like, what if there was rape when the child was underage and all sorts of stuff like that. And like, it's just very hairy, complicated issues that if you were in that situation or someone you love was in that situation, it'd just be a very different story.
Right.
And so the best advice there is, before you go judging somebody else, try to make that situation personal.
Yeah.
And then see how you respond.
Because I think we would all be have very different responses if we either personally experienced it or someone that we cared about and loved was personally experiencing
it. At least your approach would be more gracious.
A little more gracious, which kind of speaks then to the damage, unfortunately, that Christians or pro-life, advocates have done in these kinds of protests as they give about abortion.
Yeah.
Especially with like the use of the terminology, like calling women murderers when they've had an abortion, but you don't know necessarily why they've had an abortion. Like
that should just never happen.
Like, I mean, that should just never happen ever. Like, I'm so sorry.
Like, if there's one takeaway, don't call anyone a murderer.
that's just so devastating, especially for a woman in that position.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get to that point with a lot of pain and there's a lot of decisions and thoughts that have gone into that. And then for someone in such a like very vulnerable state, you'd be like, you're a murderer.
Yeah.
Like that is really hard. And I think it's done a lot of damage for the Christian conversation about this topic because people feel like, oh, well, Christians are anti-me, anti-woman, anti-mom who had to get an abortion.
We talked about in our first episode of this season, that's kind of the Christians are mean. Like there's no grace there. There's no love there towards somebody. Even if you think what they did was wrong, there's still no love or grace towards that person who made a difficult decision that wasn't easy for them.
Absolutely. And that's been, I think, done a lot of damage with Christians engaging in this conversation, which I think is what we're trying to do here is re-engage in a way that is biblical, but also ministerial and meets people where they're at and has grace and has compassion and empathy for a situation that would be devastating for any of us to be in.
Yeah.
Because we have to reframe it.
Yeah, totally.
Like, this is not a protest. This is we have to engage in this and not make moms who've had an abortion feel like they can't go to church or feel like they can't talk with us or that they're less than us because of decisions that they've had to come to at some point in their lives.
And it's a decision that's also over. Right. Like, so like there's no coming back from that.
No.
So, to bring psychological damage to someone that already has dealt with very difficult things, I don't see how it can possibly be helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that I think is really important and an argument that is given against people who are pro-life is that they're not really pro-life. Mm-hmm. They're pro-birth.
Right.
Because after the baby's born, they don't really help with any rights on anything else.
No.
And so that argument, I think it doesn't get to the heart of the abortion argument, where life starts.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does do is it calls out a double standard that Christians are functioning under.
Yeah.
And so Christians believe, or they root this idea of pro-life, they should anyways, under a general ethics of life
that
is rooted in scripture.
Mm-hmm.
God is life. God is existence itself. All things are drawn into existence from God,
right,
to use kind of like this Paul Tillich terms.
Right.
You know, life is drawn from the source of life, the giver of life. The spirit is life. Adam and Eve had the tree of knowledge of good and evil and tree of life. And then if you ate from the tree of life, you would live.
Yeah.
You would have everlasting life. These are concepts that are not like insignificant or small, but
no,
heavily rooted scripturally.
Absolutely.
And should be a part of every Christian's ethics.
Agreed.
And if that is the case, then you would think that they would generally have a disposition against abortions.
Absolutely.
At least in a flippant way. But you can have a nuanced understanding of like the difficulty of the decision,
mm-hmm,
but still have a general sense of like, we're going to be for the things that produce life, the things that give life.
Yeah.
And so that argument, I think, is pretty dang important.
I would agree.
The hey, you're gonna put these Christians on blast for saying that they are for life, you know, advocates of an ethics of life. But then at the same time, you're not gonna help women with healthcare.
No.
You're not gonna help them with childcare, with the kids' education. You're not gonna help walk with women through pregnancy.
No.
You're not gonna help them see a future,
yeah,
that's possible, mm-hmm, if they kept the child.
Yeah, you're not gonna reform the foster care system. You're not going to help give them more maternity leave. You're not going to help.
Yeah.
And then we love your kid. We love your baby until it's a person of color, until it's LGBTQ+, mm, until it's all these things. And it's like, then you're born and then we immediately don't like you. Or we immediately have an issue with you.
And that's a double standard.
And that's the double standard that we have here.
The thing is, if you have an ethics of life, then what we should be looking for is, instead of talking about pro-life in that way, maybe we should talk about just like the basic ethics term that we're talking about, human flourishing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the reason why we believe in this ethics of life, is for humans to flourish, and we do live the good life for human flourishing.
Right.
So what are the things that can help a human flourish? And if it is the woman going to term, but finding a way of living that won't destroy her future,
yeah,
and you can show that she can flourish,
yeah,
I think you're going to be able to reduce abortions on a much greater scale, mm-hmm, than any law can do.
Yeah, I would agree.
I want there to be less abortions because I'm pro-life. I want there to be drastically and significantly less abortions.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way to do it?
Yeah.
How can you reduce abortions?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different question.
Yes, it is.
Then should we overturn Roe versus Wade, or mm-hmm, or make laws more restrictive for women and stuff like that?
Yeah.
If you just peel everything back and you look at the ethics of life, then you're going to be like, okay, this 17-year-old girl that had a baby, she made mistakes, whatever. Like, literally, who cares? You do not have to think about the reason why someone is giving birth. Like, that's not even...
Yeah. It's not important.
It's not important.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That young girl is going to bring a human life into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you want her to bring the human life. You want her to be a good mother.
Yeah.
And you want the child to grow up in a good environment.
Yeah.
In a country that cares for everybody involved.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So make that happen. Make that happen.
Yeah.
Make it so that way that young girl can still have a career, have a job, still be able to do stuff.
Yeah.
Create the pathways for human flourishing to happen for both the baby and the woman.
Yeah.
And you know what you're doing? You're helping an American citizen thrive.
Yes.
Is it not something our government should do?
It is definitely something our government should do.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, even as we get up into these political, like, we're not here to change anybody's votes or anything, but I think it's important to consider that if you're only voting for a candidate because they're anti-abortion, but they're also not pro-reform of healthcare, they're not pro reforming the adoption and foster care system, like, if they're not pro any of that,
mm-hmm,
then is this a false sense of security? Are you saying, oh, well, at least I know that they're not for abortion?
Yeah.
But are they for life? Like, are they actually pro-life?
If you take the idea, mm-hmm, of just having ethics of life and just like actually, so what you're supposed to do philosophically, you're supposed to look at an argument and look at its explanatory power. How much can it actually explain?
Yeah.
Right? And does it explain a lot of different things? And then it's a good argument. We're going to see if it's reasoned well, if it's clear, but we also have to see if it's consistent, if it's coherent, and if it's comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
Those three things are crucial.
Yeah.
So like, if you believe something, but you don't consistently hold it,
yeah,
then do you actually believe it?
Right.
You're just actually giving a one-off. You're giving some evidence for some various belief, but your, yeah, actual beliefs are something different.
Yeah.
So if you hold to an ethics of life, what should your views of war be?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What should your views of capital punishment be?
Yeah.
What should your views of gun violence be?
Yeah.
What should those views, if you're talking about human flourishing, mm-hmm. about life, because God is life and all of our lives exist in him, right?
100%.
So if you become a single issue voter.
It's the danger.
And you are against abortion, but you are for war and, you know, capital punishment, all these other things. Mm-hmm. You know, I was for capital punishment. I was a youth pastor, and this kid, he was like 14 or 15 or something. And I was like, you know, capital punishment makes sense because it's fair. Like if somebody murders somebody, then, you know, like eye for an eye, they should, yeah. that's what's there. And then he was like, he just so quickly said, he's like, but if you murder them, then they can't be saved.
Clocked.
And then I was just like,
oh, wow.
Oh man, that's like super duper right.
Oh, that's good.
Do you take out the possibility for this guy to be redeemed? It made me rethink everything there, you know? Yeah. And just like, it was inconsistent with my idea of life of like, mm-hmm. so I'm no longer for capital punishment.
Yeah.
Life imprisonment for show.
Show, I'm in it. And if we're going to be pro-life, then let's work on being Christians who have care groups in their churches for moms who've been through abortions, who let's think about how to provide daycare for young moms who've had kids and can't afford to put their kid in daycare because it's mad expensive. Mm-hmm. Or let's figure out how to find out what local resources in our area can help. Like, what's your local pregnancy center? Like, how can we come around instead of being mean
right.
and against it? If we're going to be pro-life, then let's figure out how to practically put our boots on the ground and not just vote for our morals, but how do we as Christians, as believers, come around and support the people who have actually and genuinely gone through these things?
How can you be really pro-life?
Yeah, how can we be really and genuinely pro-life? How can we take these young moms' kids to school? Can we help bring them meals when we know that they're struggling? Can we, you know, like raise money and help them buy supplies or whatever? Like, how can we support the women and the kids and the fathers who've gone through this kind of stuff? Yeah. Like, let's put our money where our mouth is and not just vote politically, but like, how do we actually live a pro-life life?
And recognize too that it's not forever.
No.
It's not like a woman that had a baby and was considering abortion, but now is being helped by the church. They're not going to be infants forever.
No.
These kids are going to grow up.
Yeah.
And if you are a church that's loving and kind towards this whole family, guess what? That is a witness that goes beyond that family.
Yes.
So not only are you not on the hook forever to care for this child, but if you do properly care for this child and this family and
love
them.
That is more powerful of a witness than standing outside an abortion clinic with a sign.
Much more powerful. And it's actually doing the work that Christ has called us to do because he calls us to be for the orphans and the widows.
Yep.
Maybe we just put in the same thing, single mothers who had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Love them, care for them, help them.
Yep.
Don't think that it was right to have an abortion. You don't have to.
You don't have to, and we don't.
But you can still love them and help them and, you know, dignify them as human beings and be the church to them and for them.
Yep.
All right.
It's good.
Well, hopefully that discussion, I don't know if it brings clarity or if it muddies things up more, but I think that's kind of the nature of it, right? Yep. Like it's a difficult conversation.
And these are conversations worth having.
They're worth having though. All right. Well, this was brought to you by the School of Theology and Ministry. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.